Hello, welcome to the Poet Runner podcast. I have my co-host Richard Modiano, and I believe we have Linda. Oh crap! I don't want to mess up your last name. I forgot what the first initial was.
Norton. Linda Norton.
Norton. See, Norton. I was going to go with Norton, but then I was thinking, I don't know where Horton came from. This is the problem with being dyslexic. You mix up things. Thank you for being here, and I'll let Richard do the beginning as he always does.
Well, both books are so rich. I mean, I wish we had more than a half an hour to talk, but we'll do the best we can with the time that we have. I actually want to go right to Whiteout first, if that's all right.
Thanks to both of you for having me. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. So one of the things that this might seem an exotic comparison, but I see that family is at the center of Whiteout. And when I read the book, it seemed to me it was like reading the first three chapters of Capital, where Marx discusses the commodity as the foundation for the capitalist mode of production. Mm-hmm. And family is sort of the building block of the rest of society.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what I saw in the book, and I saw the same sort of unpacking of the family in Whiteout, the way Marx unpacks the commodity in the first three chapters of Capital, which is maybe like a third of the first volume, which is a long book.
I'm extremely happy to be compared to Marx, but go on.
Well, you know, what I wanted to ask you first is how did this form come to you, this combination of journal, memoir, and poetry? I mean, how did you decide to approach the subject in this way? What?
Yeah, great question. So I struggled tremendously with the form for Whiteout, but then realized that I could do the same kind of formal thing I had done in my first book, Public Gardens, interspersing sections of poems and prose. And I think one thing I would say about coming from a working class background is I would like anybody to be able to read my books. And a lot of people do not read poetry. So I felt that the prose would kind of illuminate the poetry. And Whiteout is far more ambitious and I would say risky in terms of subject matter and self-exposure than the Public Gardens. Because in Whiteout, I would say many of the failures and disasters do come out of the family, but the narrator, in other words, me and the writer, has lived long enough to make failures of her own aplenty. So it was an effort to try to find a form that would contain all that was me up to, say, age, well, up, put it in terms of the country, up to just before the election of Donald Trump. But I feel now that almost everything in this book almost forebodes that disaster that we're still living in, I'd say.
I agree.
Because I mean, there's every historical event is personal in this book. The one thing I would say about this, I wouldn't do a memoir this way again because it's too difficult because it's all based in my journals, but I'm supposed to be talking to myself, so for me to be able to convey things to the reader without explaining, because you wouldn't explain something to yourself in your own notebook, was quite arduous. So I boxed myself in with that craft choice.
Yeah. Well, I know, you know, you probably are, know an interviewer asked Gertrude Stein, who do you write for? And she said, I write for myself and other people. And
yeah.
That's what I got from Whiteout.
Yeah, I'm working right now on, well, really finishing a very short book. I thought I would kind of do a palate cleanser before I do the, I'm working on the third book in this trilogy. And Richard, you and I have talked, so I will just say I'm thinking of the third book as the Irish book, and that will be just prose and very documentary. But writing this little short book of poems and an essay that goes with it, it's called Cloud of Witnesses, and it's really about how there's no me without others and how the pandemic was so isolating and kind of shocking, because so much of my writing is just about what happens when people run into each other, you know, the living and the dead, really.
And, you know, to me, that's something that everybody can understand at one level or another.
Sure.
You know, it's like, well, here's another one that I thought of is, you know, the great Rimbaud quote, I am an other.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I worked in oral history for years at the Bancroft Library at UC Berkeley and edited many, many, many histories, life histories. And women would have often a hard time talking about themselves. And men, let's say, mostly did not have that problem. So my books are very much feminist books, but they're also about heterosexuality. And they're about the self being all mixed up with other people. And of course, I am a mother. So that, as a friend of mine who chose not to have kids once said to me, I didn't want to have my heart hanging outside my body every single minute of my life, which is a pretty good description of motherhood.
Yeah. Well, you're... we have a kind of a similar background. You have your father was Irish, your mother Sicilian. My father was a Sephardic Jew. My mother came from an Irish background, and there was a there is a culture clash. You have sort of the Mediterranean, I'm not saying these are biologically rooted, let me get that straight right away,
yeah.
But there is, you're enculturated in a certain way, coming from a specific background. And when you form an intimate relationship with somebody in a different culture, there is an inevitable culture clash. There is different, you know, you're used to eating different kind of food, you have different idiomatic expressions, your body language is different, and so on. And, you know, I saw this in my own parents. And of course, I picked up on that in your descriptions of your family background and your relations with your mother and with your father, which are all they're presented with great naked intimacy, which is hard to write about, and hard to write about without softening it, and I didn't detect anything like that. It was pretty, all of the rough edges were there.
And I'm the oldest in a big family, so there's also always this fact that each child has his or her own experience of the same two parents. I wanted to say, it's not in the book, but I read Kwame Anthony Appiah's book about human rights revolution. I can't remember the name of it right now. But it's, he gives examples like the end of dueling and the abolition in England of slavery, the slave trade, and the end of foot binding in China. And his one of his theories is that each culture has a kind of place where the tipping point occurs. And he uses examples of honor societies and shame societies. And I would say that though both of my parents come from heavy-duty Catholic traditions, the Irish would be the shame society, the shame culture. And the Sicilians are very much about honor and pride and, you know, respect and vengeance toward anyone who disrespects you. So kind of one externalizes certain feelings and the other culture, I would say, internalizes the shame. And reading this, at the end, he does talk about Sicilian culture and how the Italian neorealists and satirists kind of made fun of the machismo of Sicilian culture, and that helped break down this very ancient, really misogyny that's part of the culture. And I thought that was quite interesting to think about, or as Freud says, the narcissism of minor differences, like as you say, Richard, you know, the things that get played out in a marriage that are also larger than the individual people or the kids. So.
Yeah. And of course that informs our sensibilities.
Yes, yours and mine. Particularly now that you and I have had a chance to talk a little bit.
And, you know, one other thing that we have in common is we both had a sibling who died of AIDS.
Yeah.
In the same city and during the same period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very close. Close in age and close in years in the epidemic. And, I was thinking and writing the other day about how when I was young, I really was interested in epiphanies, you know, like Joycean epiphanies and Dubliners, things that hit you, and that often happens in short story form. And but now that I'm much older, I'm very much more interested in time and money and pattern. And part of pattern is that you and I would have been young people. I think we're almost exactly the same age. And you and I would have been kind of walking around each other in New York City in those years, the way characters do in Ulysses all day long.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
And that does seem to be a pattern in life, like so much so that one isn't even surprised by it anymore. Like, oh, of course. Of course we were living the same life when we were in our 20s, and then we only get to meet here in California now.
Yeah.
Isn't that lucky? Because we do know how young our brothers were when they died. Yours is Robert, is that right?
Yes.
And mine is Joseph. It's important to say their names, so... Heartbreaking.
And I also picked up on the same, there is an anguish that you experience because you cannot intervene and save your brother. And, you know,
or any of them.
Or any of them.
Any, I feel like I wasn't a good enough mother when I was a child, you see. But of course, I wasn't their mother. But a lot of suffering in the family, but also vitality.
Yeah.
So when you talk about the different cultures, I also think of it as hybrid vigor.
Well, I know that this is an enculturated male response, I'm sure, but I thought that, you know, irrational as it was, I said, I can somehow fix this. I can change this. I can turn it around. I will find out how to do this. And, of course, that was, like, totally...
You mean for when your brother was ill? Or
Yeah.
And then, yes. Yeah, I don't know. Yes, it is. It is a male response, but it's also, in my case, the kind of oldest child of alcoholic and stuff. And it takes a long time to realize how little is in our control. And then for the sister of a brother who died, I think maybe we talked about this too, there's just the Antigone response of wanting to honor him and have him respected, and, you know, which of course was difficult with gay men dying in the 80s. They were disrespected,
yes.
Hidden away. And, so, you know, he and one of my other brothers, Richard, are important characters in both my books.
Yeah.
Because they both need to be respected and attended to. And I guess I'm the one to do it.
Well, maybe we could hear something from the book. I mean, there was a poem that I...
Oh, sure.
...that I liked called My Mystic.
Oh, that's for Fanny Howe. I just spoke with Fanny yesterday.
That's on page 52, if you have that book in front of you.
Yeah, I do. I have that. So it's in the feminine section of the book.
Yeah.
And there's various, you know, mothers and not very good mothers. And My Mystic for Fanny Quincy Howe. My mystic is not old enough to be my mother. She yells no when she laughs at my joke. She can't keep anything down and doesn't drink except for whiskey, wine, and water. My mystic is her father's daughter. My mystic has her own monk, a hermit who had his own monk. Out on a boat on the Atlantic with a friend, tossed around, my mystic screams with laughter when they don't drown. My mystic has an early edition of Proust in a closet with her sheets and towels. Any house sitter could steal it, but no one does. My mystic picks at her croissant in the dark, Swan's Way in her lap. My mystic wants to know all about my men, so I tell her, and she groans. And then we talk about the new pope. She thinks he has a humble face. From her apartment, we can see an orange neon sign across the Cambridge Green. At dusk, it tints the dirty snow. My mystic used to run in and out of that hotel lobby with her best friend stealing candy. Now children crawl all over my mystic. In the pockets of her vest, the color of their red toboggan, they find hard candy. My mystic is a sister, is lilac, is toast. My mystic has already bought her plot. My mystic is both the crone and the infant in the fairy tale. My mystic is a fairy. She flies everywhere but leaves no carbon footprint. My mystic has a device. Children text my mystic from L.A., Dubai, Oxford, Paris. My mystic might have been named Affliction or Delight if born at sea in 1620, or two centuries later out of Cove and mad in steerage, perhaps Teresa. My mystic has lips the color of a rose named for the Cathars, who had but one sacrament, consolation.
That's a terrific poem. I mean, it's and at this point in the whole text, it's like it was sort of like we were entering into a new not exactly phased, but a new sub-theme was emerging for me when I got to this poem.
What was that?
Well, it was now, it is in the section called The Feminine, and now we sort of move into basically the experience of a woman, qua woman.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I do feel I had to learn how to be a woman in some ways. But like I said, making mistakes is how you become, right? So Richard,
yeah.
before we pass that poem, I want to say maybe later when we're not talking, read that poem again and you find an Irish flag in it.
Oh, okay.
Because Fanny's mother, Mary Manning, was Irish, Anglo-Irish, had a little romance with Samuel Beckett. So there's a visual, one of the stanzas has a tricolor.
And the other thing that sort of does more than flesh out, but there are all of the books that you're reading, and the books that are meaningful for you, that you are in dialogue with or arguing against, that appear throughout the text. And you know, that was something that I liked about it. In fact, when I read biographies, I often wish that the biographer had researched what was in their subject's library.
Yes. And I'm always interested in annotations and how people read. And I read a book last night, Ada Calhoun's, also a poet, about her father, Peter Sheldahl, and Frank O'Hara. And it's the first time I've ever read a book on a device.
Yeah, I heard about that. I've heard about this book. Yeah, it just came out, right?
Yes, it's new. I got it. I downloaded it from the library on my phone, and I've never read a book on a device, and I loved the book. But it was strange not to be able to annotate. So now I have to go through the phone, the download, and then copy things into my notebook, and that's how I kind of encode them into my body and kind of trick myself into writing sometimes.
Well, would you pick out something that you think would give our listeners a real taste of the prose in this book?
Oh, the prose. Well, sure. I have my reading copy that I read from when I do events. Okay, yes. I believe in this kind of divination of just letting things fall where they fall. So this opens to 2009, which is the murder of Oscar Grant here in Oakland, unarmed. And this is right after the election of Obama, which, of course, seemed impossible that it could happen in the United States. And what we have found is...
page 162.
Yeah, on page 162, we have found that, yes, it was impossible because America is so racist that it just triggered an apocalypse of ugliness that continues to this day. But anyway, technically, we did elect a black president. I'll start in the middle. Don't want to go on too long. White anarchists come to Oakland to smash windows and set things on fire, and then they go home to Berkeley. The cop who shot Oscar Grant lives in Napa. Why don't they go to Napa and tear it up, or to Marin, or down to 4th Street in Berkeley, where the ice cream costs $6 a scoop? Are there no racists in those places? Nothing that needs to be smashed or broken or lit up? The phone rings. a number I don't recognize. Hey, it's Marcus calling from a new phone. My grandmother said you'd be thinking of me. She said I should call you. I'm glad you did. We make a plan to meet at Lane Splitter. Inauguration night. Isabel and I go to Jack London Square for a block party near Everett and Jones. We're the only white people there. We stand on the curb at the back of the crowd while people dance in the street. On a huge outdoor movie screen, they're repeating a holy trinity of images, a lynching in the Jim Crow South, the face of the first black president, and a picture of Oscar Grant. I explained to Isabel as succinctly as possible why these things go together. I grew up kneeling beneath Jesus on the cross. It doesn't seem strange to me that suffering and crucifixion and resurrection are part of the same story. Bells in the campanile we played lift every voice and sing tonight as I was leaving work. In the locker room, the tune comes into my head and I start to hum as I put my clothes on. In the other rows, a few women start to hum along. Then we sing the words softly. As I leave, I look down the aisle and note that each of the singers is white. Someone apparently taught us something.
Yeah. And at a price, too. Well, that transit cop that killed Oscar Grant, his trial was in Los Angeles. I think he was an immigrant, right? A white immigrant from, I forget where.
Yeah, I forget his name. Johannes something. I can't remember his name either.
I think it was Eberle, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And I remember in this passage, of course, you didn't read this part, but there was the reference to Rodney King. And and I was here for that.
Yeah.
And, of course, the trial was held in Santa Clarita, which is cop town in Los Angeles County. All white jury, cops on the jury, and they, of course, were acquitted. And just last summer was, it was 1992, so it was the 50th anniversary. Was it the 50th? 30th anniversary? No, 50th anniversary? 40th anniversary. I'm not good at math. But there was a program called, it was on May Day, a May Day program called Los Angeles for All, held at the Filipino Cultural Center here in Los Angeles. And the main subject of that was the 40th anniversary of the Los Angeles uprising. And it's shocking to think that so little has changed in those 40 years.
Yep. And we thought that video, capturing on video these things would change everything, and we see that it doesn't. And I know you've read the book, and that I talk about coming from a family with cops. And one doesn't hear too much about that kind of thing, because people like our family don't really usually become writers, and we certainly are not supposed to talk about cops in anything but in an adulatory way. So for me, living the life I have lived, I am from that white world, and I live a little bit differently, quite a bit differently than I was raised to live. And everyone has a job to do in life, and that's part of my job as a writer. So.
And I know that at that period, I was working in downtown Los Angeles. I was teaching English as a second language in adult education. And I was going to go to work that day. And my girlfriend called She's a sansei, third generation Japanese American, and she said, "Don't go downtown." She's a lawyer. And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "I was just there. Don't go downtown. It's not good. Just don't go to work today."
Mm-hmm.
And nothing had happened at this point. It built up, and I said, "Oh, it's not going. Nothing's going to happen. There's just going to be some demonstrations in front of City Hall." Well, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I was completely wrong, and she was completely right on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing that's at the core of this book is race.
Yeah.
And you know how we are all implicated in this sort of racialized world. And I think it's fortunate that at least some white people can empathize with people of color or see through it, or some combination of experiences have given us like a window or a way of seeing. We can look at ourselves, too.
Mm-hmm.
We can look at ourselves frankly and honestly. And it's not about guilt-tripping other people or guilt-tripping yourself. It's seeing what's there. And what has to be done, and what is the right thing to do?
Yeah, cutting through the shit, cutting through the bullshit is important.
Richard,
but also, yeah.
We hit that time, I've already told the other guests coming in that 4 more minutes, so you guys can wrap it up.
Okay. Well,
thank you, Rafa.
I wish we had more time, and it was there was so much more to talk about.
I didn't
want to
cut you off.
What I would like to tell our listeners, we didn't get to Linda's prequel to that book, The Public Gardens, which is also an excellent book. But that is Public Gardens is available from Pressed Water, which is the name of the publisher. You can order it directly from the publisher or get it at your local independent bookstore or, as a last resort, get it at Amazon.
Yeah, I have to say, Amazon is probably the way to go, or small press distribution.
Small press
SPD.
Distribution. Let me just wrap this part up. And Whiteout,
sure.
That's W-I-T-E, as in the old typewriter Whiteout.
Mm-hmm.
Whiteout, Love and Work, a memoir with poems. That is Hanging Loose Press, also available from small press distribution or from the publisher. And you might have a chance of finding it in your local independent bookstore. So
Thank you so much.
One last thing. I mean, if you want to do a part two of this interview and get into the other book, we could schedule you for September.
Let's do that. That would be.
I know. I think Richard would. And it seemed that you guys had so much more to talk about. So I figure we could schedule you sometime September, you know, after the show. I'll figure out what works for you.
Yeah.
No,
Richard,
you seem to have more to
have
say,
a lot
so
to
I figure
talk
we should
about.
Continue it.
Yeah.
We have a whole Irish Jewish things to discuss too, besides what we talked about.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, there you go.
Thank you both.
Yeah.
I'll say goodbye,
sure.
And we'll communicate about that. Thanks both. Bye.
And, thanks, Linda,
right,
for your
care.
Time and for a great bye. Conversation.
Oh.
And now we have Tommy, and I don't want to mispronounce your name. I want to say Cho or Chu. I'm going to mess it up.
It's the second one, Chew.
Damn, see, I should have gone with Chew first. I should have gone with Chew.
Yeah.
See, I felt confident about Chew, but, you know, you always feel, when you feel confident, you fear you're going to be wrong. So you go with the wrong option.
Yeah. Well,
which just happened.
Yeah.
So let me see. First thing to ask, 5Ks, marathons, half marathons, or ultras?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Now, which ones do you run? 5Ks, half marathons, marathons, or ultras? Or 100 milers? I mean, you can't leave 100 milers out.
So far, all of them.
Really?
But I haven't done an ultra this year, though, yet. I did one last year.
I was just guessing here.
Yeah.
So you've done a 100-miler?
Not yet. Not yet. I don't know. I'm not quite sure if I'm ready for that one yet. I still have to work on the 100K.
Anything past 26 miles is great. I mean, I'm doing my first, they call it an ultra, but like I did last week, I call it a baby ultra because it's 31 miles.
Oh, yeah. So that's what I did. That was my first ultra, was 31 miles without proper training.
What do you mean by without proper training? What happened?
Well, consider you ran a marathon already, and it's only another additional 5 miles. I don't think you will probably need that much training for that. So, but I wasn't expecting the weather that day. We did it in Washington, starting in Washington. It was the Marine Corps 50K. Marine Corps Marathon 50K. Well, Marine Corps 50K, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was it's like monsoon coming down. Like literally, you know, nonstop. Yeah. But I had a poncho, so I was so ready, but at the same time, not really. Because then, like, the last 10K come out and it's like 80 degrees.
That's going to fuck with your system.
Yeah, well, we just did a run walk, you know, for the last few miles or so. So it wasn't too bad.
But you finished. I mean, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's all about finishing. You know, PRing and all that stuff is like behind me. Even though it would be nice sometimes, which I did this year. I did PR. I ran Boston Marathon in under 5, my first time running Boston.
Nice.
And then I did that same week, I ran the Brooklyn Full Marathon, and I set a new PR.
Wow.
My old PR was 4:54, and when I did the Brooklyn Full, I ended up doing 4:38, I believe.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I tell you, someone actually told me a different way to train. Like the last person I interviewed, I talked to her a little bit afterwards, and she told me that I should start doing like 5 miles, then a long distance run, then 5 miles again, then another long distance run. You know, she said it'd make you stronger, so I'm trying it to see how it works. Because I've been running 15 miles for the last 3 weeks every day.
Wow, that's a lot.
So,
and you're training for marathon? You said you're training for the ultra?
Yeah, the Bulldog in August 20th, the Bulldog 50K.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I'm training for that one. I want to do...
I want to say you need 15 miles every day, though. That's a lot.
Yeah, I'm kind of
doing that,
that way.
7 days a week?
Yeah, I was doing it 7 days a week.
So you're not taking any rest days. So you don't have any rest days.
Well, Mondays and Tuesdays when I don't work, I end up sleeping the whole day. That counts. I mean, as soon as I finish running, I go home and I end up crashing. I mean, my days off, my body catches up to me because I just fall asleep.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like,
so 15,
you don't have to work today.
So 15 times 5, that's 85 miles. That's 75 miles. That's a lot.
Yeah.
I don't really think, in my opinion, but I could be wrong, you know. I'm still not expert, really. But from my experience, I mean, I wouldn't think you need technically that many miles.
Yeah, you know, that's why I'm actually listening to advice right now. So I'm trying to, today I ran 5 miles under 40 minutes, so I was happy with that. Because
the 5 miles,
I was happy to, you know, be able, in 40 minutes and 14 seconds. And it's like, I haven't done that in about 6 months.
So that's about 8 minute pace or so.
Yep. I was trying to keep it up that way, kind of. But I noticed since I haven't done a speed run in a while, it was a little bit painful.
Yeah.
You know, because the breathing wasn't there today like it usually is. So I was like, ah.
How's the weather in your area?
Today was like 80 when I ran.
Okay.
So, yeah, no.
Yeah, here,
but I'm,
here it's been high 90s.
So what runs do you prefer, the marathon, the ultra, or the smaller 5Ks?
Right now, into the marathons because I have a goal that I want to set. I'm not sure if you heard about the World Marathon Majors yet.
I think somebody mentioned it, but tell me more.
Yeah, it's six countries.
Mm-hmm.
Six majors, basically, in six countries. So it's Boston, Chicago, New York City, Berlin, Tokyo, and London. Those are the six. So once you finish your six, wherever your sixth major is, they'll give you a different medal for that. So it's like an extra medal. Could you have like a tag on your back or something? That's a six-star finisher,
mm-hmm.
so that they know once you come across the finish line, they're going to give you that extra medal. So anywhere you go with those six countries and wherever you finish, you'll get that medal. So I'm planning to run Tokyo next year, and that's my last star. Yeah. And then right now it's a lot of politics and stuff, COVID and all that involved.
Yep.
I just heard now you need a visa to get into Japan. I mean, I'm a U.S. citizen. You never before you needed a visa to go to Japan. You know, mainland China, yes, but not Japan. So, but you know, things changed. So the way. They didn't have the process yet, even. I just read that they haven't do the process. You're supposed to be able to get your visa online. So, and the race is in 7 months. So hopefully that they'll make it quick for us to apply for it, you know.
No, I mean, definitely want to get it done. I mean, that preparation's crucial. I mean, I got lucky because I'm... Yeah, no, I mean... Being prepared for the run is important. I mean, I got to run. I mean, a little lesser because I'm running the Big Bear Marathon. It's just I'm in L.A. A friend of mine's actually going to go with me, and we're going to go there together. So I have my transportation to get up there, and then I don't got to worry about it anymore. But there's always like when you plan a race outside your own house, it's a lot of planning. I mean, you know, outside of your state.
True.
I mean,
My friend, he has a hotel already booked in Japan that leaves two people, so at least I'm gonna stay with him, you know, and then I just pay him whatever the difference is and stuff. I just have to book the flight, but right now, so they say they haven't uplifted it. I'm hearing like two different stories that they haven't lifted the restrictions for foreigners to travel into Japan yet, so I'm not 100%, and I'm bad with research, you know.
No, it's got to be frustrating because I mean, you want to. Yeah. I mean, me, I like to get things like all the marathons I plan. I like to get them booked, you know, like in advance, just so you know I'm prepared and I got them, you know, mapped out in my head when it's coming up, how much I got to train and all that stuff.
Yeah. And you can always cancel. I'm sorry.
What's your training process? How do you train for each run?
So currently I'm with Adidas Runners NYC, New York City. And we have a 16-week plan geared towards New York City. But I still have to up the miles because I have another marathon coming actually next month. But I should be good because I've been, you know, technically I've been training since like the beginning of the year, since I know I'm going to have such however many marathons I do a year. So like I'll be prepared, you know, even though I might not hit all the miles, you know, but at least, you know, still I'm being active. I'm doing CrossFit.
Yeah.
I'm doing the speed training, tempo, and the long runs and all that stuff. So
yeah, I added every once in a while after I run, I do the stair climb on level 20 for about 15 minutes. And
wow.
That helps. Yeah, because
the level 20. So
I
level
like,
20 is like really hard to push, or
no? You know, once you get used to it, you know, it's like when I first started the stair climb, level 7 was hard, you know. But I guess once you get adjusted to it, it's like running too. Like once you get used to a certain amount of miles, they become, and it's not bragging when you say it, but it becomes easy, you know.
Yeah.
Like
right.
5 miles is pretty easy. You know.
Yeah, people say that. But if you're
and
not a
people
runner,
look at you like, no, it's not. You know, if you're not a runner, you're not. It's not that you're bragging. It's just what you're used to, you know, as a runner.
Yeah.
You know, to a certain point, 15 miles has become easy. It's just I have to map out the distance in my head and see where I'm going to run, and I always manage to get it done. So, you
right.
know, I figured the new advice that I got for, like, you know, 11, you know, doing 5, then I'm going to do 20 tomorrow, then I'm going to do 5, then 15, then 10, then 5 again. So that's the way I think I'm going to train right now, you know, like going down gradually, then going down, you know, always going to 5. And then so I don't always do long distance runs all the time.
Usually they work their way up, and then when it gets closer to the race, then you do what's called tapering, and then you go down
mm-hmm.
in your mile and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
I've done tapering. I don't know. I mean, I don't really feel that great about tapering. I mean, it works for a lot of people, but me, it's kind of like I just like running my miles. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm
like body and used to it already.
Yeah. I mean, people told me I was crazy because I was actually running marathons without drinking anything, you know. But
you
when I finished, I drank about six.
Drinking
about
anything?
Yeah. Nope. Nada. I did 4 marathons without drinking anything.
Wow, that's insane.
That's what I've been told, you know, but the thing is, once I get done, it's like, you do not know how fast I drink those water bottles that they give out to you. They're like, someone goes to me, this is your 5th bottle. I go, yeah, and I need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like, keep giving me the water bottle.
You need to at least have some water in your system, though, because you...
Well, yeah,
gonna,
no,
no. You're sweating all that out.
No. I've just started training with when I've been doing the 15 miles and been waiting until the 10th mile to, like, you know, take sips of an electrolyte drink to get used to, you know, drinking liquid as I run again.
Oh, okay.
So when I do long runs, I take, electrolyte drink, which I sip every, I mean, I don't gulp it, dude. I mean, when I first started running, I used to gulp it. It was a bad idea.
Yeah, they said don't gulp. It takes small sips.
And that's what I've been doing. I take small sips, and then, you know, I do them on every mile, you know, I would do small sips, you know, as I finish the run. But it helped. I noticed it makes a little bit of a difference. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm so, you know, you get stubborn sitting your ways. You kind of, like, don't want to budge, but sometimes you got to listen to advice because they know what they're talking about.
Right.
You know?
Cause they have done, you know, a lot. How many marathons already, and, you know, they're doing the same with the training, so, you know, it has to work for them. Or, I'm not saying everything works for everybody, you know, people's system is different, you know.
Yep.
Some people may go that long with, like, some people could go six miles without taking liquids, you can go 10 miles without, but, you know, so you still have to think in your head, like, okay, well, I'm sweating all this out, but yet, you know, so that means I'm losing, you know, this and this, and so it's still have to replace, you got replenished. You can't just like go the whole way without, you know, having any type of hydration.
No, I've started to listen because, I mean, I think the whole like running without water thing was more like an ego thing with me, you know, like I could do it. And then, you know, but I think the Orange County Marathon, I just laid on the ground for like, I don't know, 10 minutes. And my friend goes, can you get up? I go, I don't want to. Because I was like, it caught up to me after the race. And I just didn't want to admit that I was like that thirsty. And she's like, are you going to be on the ground a while? I go, yeah, you can slowly get the car now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Like, was it last year I did this challenge called Lola? So it's three races. It's not in the same day, but, you know, it's a different race each day. So it's a 5K, a 10K, and then it's a half marathon. So when and it's in Puerto Rico. And
wow.
When we did the half marathon, we started at 4 in the morning. That's because of the weather out there. It's extremely, extremely hot in here. Like first mile, so like you're already sweating, you know. Then I forgot gel that day. So I just relying what they had on the course. when I finally finished the race, so they had Gatorade at the end. And I just literally finished like three bottles, like it was like water. That was like how dehydrated I was. Literally just drinking like it was water. I'm never gonna do that again.
No, it's I don't know, do you use a camel pack or anything like that when you run long distances? You know, the little straw.
Yeah, I do have like a hydration pack, about a 1.5 or 1 liter. But I have one that's also 2 liters. But when I use a 2 liter, I tend to not finish it all. So I go with a smaller.
It's good to have
a smaller pack. Yeah.
So which one would you recommend for the 31 mile? The smaller one.
Yeah, you could probably they have the one. I think it's the 1.5 liter one. I think that's good enough. Plus, you can also use what's on the course too, like more the Gatorade water. You can use some of that before you even use the hydration pack. You know, so yeah.
I tend to when I'm running, I tend to lean toward electrolyte drinks more than water for some reason when they pass
Sorry,
them out.
Say that again?
I tend to lean to electrolyte drinks more than water when I'm running, when I'm, you know, on the course. They seem to feel better for me. I don't know why that is, but it seems to work for me. So what race do you have coming up right now?
There's this race in New York. I forgot what's it called. It's like a freaking weird name. Let me see if I can find it. It's like in a lake area. So you're basically doing almost nine loops around the lake.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel about loops?
I was gonna do it, but my friend's doing it, and you know sometimes peer pressure. I mean, I don't have to do it, but you know sometimes you know.
I don't know. I mean, the LA Marathon got bad for me because it used to go straight to the beach, and now there's a loop towards the end, which bothers me. You know, I don't like loops.
Yeah. It gets kind of boring, right?
Well, no, it kind of does because, when you're running, I mean, part of the distraction and the focus to me is being able to see different things. But if you're doing a loop, it's like you're seeing the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. It's called the So it's called the Sri Chinmoy Marathon. It's in Rockland State, Rockland Lake State Park in Conyers, New York.
Huh.
So, yeah, I've never been there before. I think it's not that far. It's not even upstate, he said. My friend lives in the Bronx. I think he said it's about half an hour or an hour away from where he lives. So,
cool.
That's going to be actually a month from now. That we're doing it.
Get it up for it.
Yeah. September, and then September, October. Then October through November, I have three more marathons that I'm doing.
For the rest of the year?
Yeah.
Oh.
And I'll give me an actual record 6 marathons this year. I normally do like
cool.
4 a year. But
I think I got about the same this year because I think I did, let's see, L.A., Orange County, Surf City. Yeah, I think I got 6. Because I also got Big Bear left and I got the Bulldog in Long Beach. I got 3 more left.
So you did the L.A. marathon?
I'm done. Yeah, I don't like it, but I do it just because peer pressure, like you said, peer pressure. I don't want to hear my friends go, why didn't you do the L.A. marathon?
That's actually
what
on my
bucket.
It's
list?
On my bucket. Yeah. Because one of my friends did it, I think, this year. So she asked me if I'm doing it. I said, no, but it's on my bucket list, so we'll see.
Well, you know what? Keep in touch, and I'll tell you when the course gets better. You know? Because it's like, right now, it's not that great. You know? I can list a whole bunch of better courses right now. I mean, Orange County was better, Long Beach is better right now, but LA the course is kind of not that great, you know.
How's the vibe there though?
That's just
cheering wise.
Oh, the vibe. Cheering wise is great. You got a whole bunch of people cheering you. It's a nice. I mean, the crowd is great. I mean,
yeah.
the one thing LA Marathon does have a good crowd. I mean, how are the crowds over where you're at? The community over there.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, especially in New York City. New York City is always the biggest vibe when you run that. They're cheering you all the way to the finish line, basically. Once you come off the bridge, the Verrazano Bridge, make that turn, and they're already be cheering. You see people out there already cheering for you, so which is good.
No, believe it or not, I didn't use. Go ahead, course wise.
Like what you're saying, like base more like course wise. Is how is it, right?
Yeah, I mean the one thing I noticed, you know, those little things that says press those more button for energy. I never press them, but I know how it can affect somebody mentally, keep them going.
Oh yeah, know? Yeah, yeah. Posters up.
Yeah, no, I mean they're out there, you know, they're cheering you on. They're, you know, I like that level of commitment from people who are not only supporting their people but helping support other people that are running.
Yeah.
So that to me that's important.
This does,
you know,
give you a little
Yeah. You know, I don't know how you train. Mostly I run alone, and I mean, I don't do that many group runs. So when I do a marathon, I notice more of the community than just when I'm by myself. You know.
Well, a couple days a week, I do group runs. The rest I run alone, unless somebody wants to run with me.
No, I haven't found anybody who wants to run the way. I mean, nobody wants to train the way I train because they think I'm a little insane. Which I probably am, which I'm okay with. But yeah, so do you prefer trails, the street, or where do you prefer to run? Because I prefer trails. I mean, I run street because I have to, but I prefer trails.
Yeah, I'm not too much of an expert when it comes to trails. I do, for me, I run, you know, mostly streets. So I would like to, you know, do like maybe a trail here and there once a week, just to mix it up. So you know, you're getting boring or just running around the streets all the time.
No, I mean, honestly, I run streets more than trails. I prefer trails, but, you know, I don't like the streets because I don't know why, but there's always somebody who's, you know, going to make a stupid comment like, you got a cigarette, you got change, and, like, you're running, are you really going to be a smoker if you're running? And, you know, all that stuff annoys me, and scooters and almost getting hit by cars.
Believe it or not, some of them are. I'm like, I see people run, and then after they're done, they're having a cigarette. What's the point of you running then?
That's nuts.
That's like you going to the gym, and then when you finish, let's go to KFC, or let's go to IHOP or something, and, you know, then you're defeating the purpose of you going to the gym. You know.
Okay, you know, I eat pancakes like a bandit, so I'm kind of a little offended by that remark about IHOP, but okay.
I mean, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I mean, if not to do it like right after you come out.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah. No, I know what you mean. But no, I mean, after a marathon, I usually do 10 pancakes right after.
Yeah, that's fine because you deserve it. You ran 26 miles. You deserve that. Whatever stacks of pancakes. Yeah, I dig that, you know.
I mean, you know, you have your favorite foods. Pancakes is like one of them, right? You know, it's been for a while. It's kind of like every time this one woman, my friend Elizabeth, would tape me, do you have to get pancakes after each marathon? I'm like, yeah, it's kind of a tradition with me now. It's kind of like, I like pancakes.
Yeah,
what's your favorite thing to eat after you finish a marathon? Do you have a pet thing to eat that you love that right after a marathon?
I really dig. I probably really dig Spanish food. Some rice and beans.
Spanish is in Spanish or Mexican Spanish?
It doesn't matter. You know, any type of Spanish food or whatever. Doesn't matter.
Oh, cool.
Like it, as long as it's like rice and beans and some chicken or whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I could do that. I like my rice and beans, but then again, I'm Latino, so I grew up on beans. I am damn stereotype. I like beans. You know, I don't know.
Who
does? I love
beans.
Right? I mean, Jesus. You'd be surprised. I know some Latinos that don't like beans, and I'm like, why? I mean, I've always liked them. It's just what it is.
That's my face, though. Yeah, that's weird.
I don't get it. Yeah.
That's like if I'm I don't like Chinese food, you know?
Oh, yeah. Kind of silly. Do you do any strength training, any, like, lifting weights or anything like that for your training? Or is it just strictly running?
No, I've been incorporating strength training now since last year. So we usually, like, I'll do once or twice a week. It definitely helps you build your stamina and your legs and stuff, and less risk of injuries, you know.
So with your legs, do you do squats? Do you do leg press? Or because I mean, I'm trying to. Yeah, I heard squats
back.
Good.
Depends what you're doing. I mean, if you're doing legs, sometimes you won't use it. Like you're at the gym, you're doing the leg press, you know. But I go to the CrossFit in the city, so it's like free weights and stuff. So it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Then I use machines and everything like that. So we like do the squats, the dumbbells and kettlebells and all that stuff.
And I mix it up between, because I go to a gym which has free weights and the machine. So for the legs, I tend to do squats and then the leg press. Because, I mean, I just lift just not to get overly thin because I don't want to be overly thin. I mean, I love running, but I don't want to be anorexic.
Right.
And I know I could probably be faster if I was skinnier, but I kind of like weighing 140. I don't want to weigh 135 or 130 because that's just too real thin.
Yeah. Then people think you
don't want to be. Yeah, they're like, hey, did you eat, you need to eat something? No, I'm fine. You know, it's like. But,
I just went.
Yeah, so, I mean. I know, I definitely know you love running, but what got you into running? When did you start running? I hadn't asked that yet.
So, about 5 years ago, I hooked up with a friend that I used to go to grammar school with, and we were training for this, like, challenge race, which is an obstacle course. And it's like a 5K obstacle course with, you know, obstacles in between. So I got we're going to the same place for the training. And then from there, we kind of just, like, hooked up. Friended her on Facebook. And then I was looking through her page, and I see she's doing these group runs in the next city over where I live, like these 5K runs every week. So I was like, sounded interesting. So I was like, let me try it out. And I tried it. Like the first mile, I definitely struggled. I was doing like 11 something a minute per mile. I actually even stopped the first mile just to take a little break, and then from then on it just pretty much took off. I did a half marathon in less than 4 months. I did my first marathon in less than a year. I know usually people be training for at least a year or so for marathon. Mm-hmm. And that's it. My running journey just took off like that. And then I've, you know, been traveling. Well, not been traveling, but, you know, now I get to travel a little more than I used to. Before, I used to be just like a homebody, you know. Come home from work, TV, eat, go to sleep, you know, same shit the next day. Excuse my language. Yeah. You know?
No. I mean, I get it. I mean, I used to be the same way. Now it's just every day it's wake up. Most days I try to wake up at 3 o'clock, get to the gym at 5, work out for about an hour, then run, then get back to the gym, take a shower, and then, you know, go throughout my day.
Yeah.
Sometimes if I wear myself out too much, take a nap before work. But
yeah,
I mean, it becomes a healthy habit. You know, you enjoy it,
yeah.
And you feel better, and
right.
You know. For me, it becomes important to, to keep it up. Because it's like anything else. If you stop doing it long enough, you completely stop doing it. And people don't understand how dangerous that is for somebody sometimes.
Yeah,
you know,
like
suddenly stopping. Well, yeah.
You get it and you stop.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah.
And then I
get it's been.
You're there. Anytime you're here, you're there.
Yep.
Which is good. I like it, you know, because it inspires other people, you know. It's like, wow, this guy is doing this, doing that. He's like all over the place.
Yeah.
Inspire me to, you know, maybe start running or start doing something that I've never done before, you know, things like that.
No, it gives you a kind of interesting reputation at work. Everybody thinks I'm crazy.
Yeah.
You know, because the miles. Cause, like, you know, they go, how many miles did you run today? They go, 15. How many did you run yesterday? 15. They go, is that normal? I don't know, but it works for me. You know, it's like.
Right.
I don't know
yeah.
what normal is. I mean, I hate when people say normal because there is no normal isn't real. It shouldn't even be a word, because everybody's normal is different. You
right,
know,
right,
your
right.
normal is yours. You know, it, like, the way you train is your normal. The way I run is my normal. The way I
right.
listen to my body is my normal. So everybody has their own normal, and we're all talking about what normal is, but bottom line, normal is different to everybody, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I've always found the word interesting. It's like, I don't think it should be a word, because there is no set normal, you know? There really
right,
isn't.
Right, right.
I mean, yeah, I mean, what, you know, what gets you going for, you know, like say I love marathons, but you like 5Ks. That's your normal. Or like, you know, you like ultras and I like halves. It's like, it doesn't matter that that's the normal that you pick.
Right.
You know,
right.
me, I want to do them all because I'm nuts. But yeah, I actually found a 5K that's a stair climb. There's a stair climb 5K that just is coming up in California that I want to do now, because it's like 3 miles straight upstairs. I'm like, I want to do that and see if I survive it.
Wow.
It just
My
sounds
friend,
crazy I, stupid.
No, no.
Hmm? Your friend?
Because one of my friends, she lives in Quebec, and she, I think last month she did a 10K all stairs. So
yeah.
Not normal to me, but to some people it might be normal, you know, like you said, you know, what your normal is. Your normal was mine is mine.
Well, that tops my stair climb. Now I just feel, out, you know, kind of inadequate now. Like, I felt all great with my, like, my, you know, my 3 mile stair climb, and someone's got a 10K. It's like, damn, that tops mine. Like,
I think they only did it once. I'm not...
It's got to be tough on the legs.
Yeah. I did, like there's another thing which is like a lot of stairs that I've done. I'm sure you heard of Spartan races, right?
Uh-huh. Yep, yep.
So they have what's called the stadium Spartan race. So it's usually in a ballpark. Well, I did mine. The last one that I did was last year in Citi Field at Met Stadium. It's a 5K. You gotta literally run across the whole like stadium in the stair area though.
Huh. So,
and then
wow.
Before that I did a 5K turkey trot. And then after I finished the stadium that same night, I went to Philly, and the next day I completed the Philly Marathon. Is that crazy or what?
Sounds somewhat normal, I mean, to me.
To some people, yeah. They like that type of thing, you know. But it took a...
No, I mean, I find...
Took a little toll.
I just find... No, I could imagine, I mean. But I think it's, you know, the more challenges you keep your life, I mean, all these stupid challenges make me feel alive. Like, you know, there's another goal, there's another something else to do. And
yeah.
I like the idea that my son's bragging to his friends, my dad's tougher than your dad. You know, and my ex-wife told me, he goes, yeah, when kids go, what do you mean your dad's tough? My dad runs 26 miles. What does your dad do? I'm like, I like my little son saying that.
It's
home. Yeah, kind of cool. Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm glad my son can brag about me. I don't want to be the dad yeah. that's like, what's your dad doing? Oh, he drinks beer all day and he doesn't move much.
Right.
Want to be that bad, you know. So, you know, it's like one of the perks of running, you know, your kid can look up, you're a good example for your kid, that, you know, you're maintaining, you know, being healthy.
Well, not just them, you know, you got other people that can be run where they're at, and it's just a little inspiration to them too.
Yeah. No, it's you know, I like that. I mean, some of the people I know have said that I've inspired them to, you know, to run. I'm like, well, yeah, just don't kill yourself at first. He goes, what do you mean? I gave myself shin splints the first week I started running again.
Oh,
so
wow.
I overdid it.
Must have been painful.
You know. It was. You know, I hadn't experienced shin splints in a while, and they're not fun.
Yeah.
Especially the walking part.
Right.
Yeah. But we're about done. But I want to invite you to come back, like, you know, maybe in 6 months to a year, because as I told all the runners that are on the show, I want the show to be more like community oriented, like, you know, check in like in the 6 months to a year and see what races you've run, you know, how far you've gotten or what goals you've met. I mean,
right. If
you finish the world thing, that'd be a great thing to talk about, you know, talk about how you got that last medal.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, definitely a comeback. Yeah,
because I've had. I think you know. You might know because you know Rahul, so you might know Benny. You know Benny Thomas.
Yeah, I think I met him before.
Yeah, because he's friends with Rahul. He recommended Rahul to me, and then Rahul recommended you.
Right.
So,
and then
so that's what I enjoy about the community. Who?
He has a friend named Jason, too. I don't know if he...
Yeah, I got you. Jason's been on the show, too, already.
Yeah.
So I've had Jason so far, yeah. So I've done New Jersey pretty well so far.
Yeah.
We
ran into each other a few times and ran a little bit together and stuff.
I want to get more into the community because podcast is Poet Runner. I've been writing poetry for 40 years, so I know poets, but the running community I need to become more part of and get more connections and get more people on the show because I want... The funny thing about the show right now is the poets are listening to are excited to hear about the running part because, let's face it, most runners aren't going to get up and run. I mean, most poets aren't. You know, it's not going to happen.
Right.
I know poets. I love them dearly, but they're not athletic, you know.
Yeah,
some are, but most, I mean, I know two or three that run, but not that many.
Their next poet on the next poem, you know, or something.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Running will inspire them too, to probably also write their next poem as well. So.
Well, no, I think when I run. Because I'm running so long, a lot of thoughts get into my head, and I'll either write them down right when I'm running, or I'll save them for when I finish running.
Yeah.
But it does, you know, it's very meditative, it's very zen, and that's what I liked about running. But I definitely want to have you on. When is the world thing going to be? When's Tokyo? You said in like 7 months?
Tokyo next year, 2023 in March. So 7 months away.
Oh, yeah. We should have you on the show in March to talk about how it went, and hopefully all that visa stuff gets cleared up.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that'd be a great topic to talk about.
Yeah. All right.
Well,
sounds good.
Thanks for being on the show, and I'll be sending you the link right after. No, it's I enjoy talking to runners because I learn something new. You know, I learn something from each runner I talk to. Yeah, I mean, I had a 75-year-old runner who's still running marathons who ran 3 marathons before I talked to him.
Wow.
And I was kind of amazed. He's 75. He goes, I finished it in 5 hours. I go, you're 75. You finished it in 5 hours. That's freaking amazing, you know. It's like, you know, the way
people,
he said, I finished in 5 hours.
Like,
you know,
3 hours, isn't that?
Yeah.
Amazing.
But, yeah, you know, it's like 5 hours for a 75-year-old man is good. You know, the fact that he's still doing it is good.
Right.
But, yeah, thank you for coming on the show. And hope to hear from you in 7 months, and I hope you make it to Tokyo.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
No, thank you for coming on. And that's it for the Poet Runner podcast. And let's see, there's anything I want to promote. Oh, yeah, Bolt from 6 a.m. Run. I've been taking it for the last 2 months. It does help me run. It does give me some energy. I feel good about taking it. And
called Bolt.
And I've been taking Bolt. Yeah, 6 a.m. Run. It's actually a pretty good free workout for running.
B-O-L-T?
Yep, I like it. I mean, I take another energy drink, which gives me like almost a heart attack, which I should stop taking because the heart attack thing should be a sign that you shouldn't be taking it.
Right. But, yeah. you know. Like that.
But no, 6 a.m. runs actually a good company for products. The stuff,
it's 6 a.m. run.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yep. I mean, I recommend it because it's been working for me. It gives me a little more lasting time, I've noticed. I mean, the startup's a little easier.
Yeah.
You know.
I could check it out during, you know, training runs and stuff and see how it goes.
No, don't take anything for a marathon until you're good for it. I mean, I learned that a long time ago.
Yeah,
don't drink,
don't eat
gels that you don't know about in a marathon, because if you eat the wrong gel during the marathon, it could be tragic.
Definitely.
You'll end up more, you lose time.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for being on the show, and look forward to hearing from you, you know, next 7 months or sooner.
All right, cool.
And
yeah, thank you.
That's it for the Poet Runner podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow with Guest of November, and I don't think I have a runner yet. I will have that done today. Take care. Thanks for listening.
All right, you too. Thank you. Bye-bye.